30 wickets in 1.75 days. That's less than six sessions. 13 wickets on day one, 17 wickets on day two. And we are way off the mark as we record this latest episode of Hotspot Delhi with me, Chetan Narula, and Daniel Norcross in London. Daniel, first thoughts. You said Friday, day three. I said Saturday, maybe day four morning. Way off the mark, way off the mark.
Well, I don't think any of us could quite have anticipated just how difficult it was going to be for batsmen from both sides to play against the ball that didn't turn. They managed to play the ball that did turn pretty well, both sides, but the ball that didn't turn was absolutely lethal. There's been so much kerfuffle, hasn't there, since people complaining about the pitch and what have you. For me, I've got to say, we could have that conversation. I don't think it was a good pitch. I don't think it was necessarily helpful for the wider cricketing public. I think it would be annoying for the authorities at Ahmedabad because they'd have liked to have got 4 days of crowds in. But ultimately, it made for some incredibly thrilling cricket. It was fascinating to watch. And the better batters who had the right mindsets, I wouldn't say thrive, but they managed to contribute. And the ones that didn't. And, you know, that's what a game of cricket is about, isn't it? You see skills, you see them brilliantly executed, certainly from the Indian spinners. I would say that if Joe Root's taking 5 for 8 and he's bowling a ball to Washington Sundar that Graham Swan would probably have on his phone and show to anybody if he'd bowled it, suggests that there was a little bit too much help there. But I'm not going to get into the rights and wrongs of that because ultimately my biggest disappointment is I'm not watching cricket on Friday. I'm not watching cricket on Saturday. And that isn't the pitch's fault. That's in large part, it's the fault of the techniques of the batters who couldn't handle it.
Absolutely. I think there's been a lot of debate on the pitch. But if you look at what's happened in terms of the scorecard, we've had two batsmen who scored half centuries. I mean, we listened to what somebody like a Kevin Peterson has had to say or somebody like a Graham Swan has had to say. And they are probably only the two cricketers or two English cricketers who actually come out in support of the pitch. The rest of them are absolutely panning it. I mean, if you look at what Graham Swan has said, he says Virat Kohli, you know, worked hard to bat well against James Anderson in nippy English conditions. So you can't really say, okay, we can't play spin or it's spinning too much. You just buckle down, you play tough cricket, you work hard and you learn to play spin, which is actually a good point because every time India fail to go overseas and win, I mean, that is a huge point and everybody talks, you know, they need coaching and play domestic cricket on swing and seam friendly wickets. They've done that because India are doing better and better in overseas cricket. So maybe what English batsmen need to go back home or need to go overseas and play on wickets which are more spin friendly. But again, this is where what Kevin Peterson has said is of really great interest. And he says that I was listening to his words on TalkSport, and he says that, you know what, there are not many great batsmen who can bat on those pitches. And maybe he's just right, because let's see the two sides. It's Joe Root and Virat Kohli who are the top tier world batsmen. Rohit Sharma, he is a top tier batsman in white ball cricket, and he's just about finding his feet in test cricket once again. So those three batsmen, then in the second tier, in the tier below that, you have Ajinkya Rahane and Cheteshwar Pujara and Ben Stokes, who's not had a great series against Ravichandran Ashwin, and then Joss Butler and maybe Johnny Bairstow. And Joss Butler and Johnny Bairstow haven't really played in this series. So on a very tough wicket, you can't expect ordinary batsmen to play well. It is a factor. I think it is a factor, and when you have 21 out of 30 dismissals to straight deliveries from both sides, you have to question the batting.
Well, you really do. I mean, look, I'm also going to be a little bit forgiving because the England chop and change policy has meant that players have come in and out of the side, and England went in with a very long tail in this game. Don't forget, starting with Archer at 8. They won't, any of those batters really, with the exception of Root, have played in those kind of conditions. Root and maybe Stokes, but you've got a young team as well. Zach Crawley at the top of the order. Johnny Bairstow hasn't necessarily played on pitches like that. Now, the nearest we have in England to a pitch like that is at Taunton. And it tells you everything that the authorities in England dock Somerset, who obviously in charge of the Taunton pitch, points in the county championship for making pitches like that. So England's batters, therefore, don't actually experience those conditions much. How they get to do that, it's not an easy answer, because the way the cricket schedule works and the fact that so many top players in Test cricket are also playing either IPL or lots of white ball franchise cricket anyway, means that where's that time for them to go and experience it? It does mean that, you know, there are issues in the world game for travelling sides if their players are not conditioned. But there are ways around that. I mean, in Dubai, they have a whole series of pitches that are designed to mimic the characteristics of pitches around the world. There's one that was like the old Wacker pitch. Yeah. There's one that's supposed to be like Trent Bridge. One's supposed to be, you know, like Chennai. And, you know, players probably need to go and practice in those conditions. As I tell you who also needs to practice, because we focus on the batters, but actually the bowlers, it's fascinating. You know, when if Akshar Patel and Ashwin are bowling on English pitches at that pace, they actually become a little bit easier to face than a sort of loopy up and down spinner that England produces for its own conditions. In Indian conditions, bowling that extra 5 to 10 kilometres an hour quicker makes them lethal, and England bowlers have got to adapt. So it's not just the batters have to adapt. You know, Jack Leach had started to adapt. He started to bowl it a bit quicker. It was really noticeable that I think Joe Root was more effective than Dom Best would have been, because Joe Root naturally bowls the ball into the pitch, round arm, round the wicket, pinging it in. On that pitch, he was perfect. I don't think England would have bowled India out for any fewer runs had they picked the extra spinner, if you see what I mean. In actual fact, the pragmatic thing to do would have been to pick an extra batter, because that's what they really needed on that pitch. Because they didn't need five bowlers. They needed Leach and Root. And they had Leach and Root. So, look, there were lots of fascinating things to come out of it. I thought it was enthralling cricket. It genuinely was. Not every game has to be the same, Chetan, does it? And people say, oh, it's bad for cricket because of this. Well, that's just not true. This is the first test match that's been as short as this in 86 years. So before everybody flies off the handle and says, oh, no, what's cricket coming to? Let's remember this is an outlier event. And there were lots of contributing factors to it. The shame for English fans, and that's probably been what's upped their rhetoric, is that over here, and maybe Indian fans aren't so much aware of this, but this is live on terrestrial television, and English cricket has been hidden behind a paywall. So its viewing figures have been depleting for the last 15 years. And then suddenly here we were with it on free-to-air television. I was on a really good time of day, 9:30 in the morning. So there was really good viewing figures for the first day and a half of the test match. And unfortunately for English cricket, it hasn't lasted into a third or fourth day and produced a close result that would really inflamed and excited the nation. So I think people's disappointment at that has rather fueled their rhetoric, is how I would say it. And I think when we take a step back, we can see that there are other factors at play.
Yes, this is a very valid point that people are talking, you know, that broadcasting is an important issue in keeping Test cricket alive. And why would anybody pay so much for Test cricket if it's getting over in 2 days? As you pointed out, it's the first time it's happened in 86 years that a Test match has gotten over within 2 days. So it's a rare event, a celestial event in that particular sense. And as you mentioned, there are other factors at play. And there are a couple of factors that I want to allude to. But again, English market is just the one market. And coming to the broadcasting debate, English market is, yes, it's a pertinent market because it's an India-England series, but it's not as big as the Indian market, right? And they were selling tickets in India as well, Ahmedabad. They sold, I saw somebody's picture who has 5 tickets for day three. Can you imagine that?
Oh, no.
5 tickets for day three. And I'm like, oh, my God, what is this guy going to do now? Anyway, in India, they don't really refund tickets because it's gone, right? The match is over. It's not the stadium's fault or the association's fault. It's probably the batsman's fault. But they're not going to reimburse your tickets, mate. My point here is, England, yes, they have their cricket behind a paywall, but they're not alone in this. In India also, Test cricket is behind paywall. International ODI and T20 cricket is considered events of national importance for some reason, and they are broadcast simultaneously on the national broadcaster Doordarshan, and any broadcaster has to share that feed with them. But not in Test cricket. No, not in Test cricket. You won't get that in Test cricket. In Test cricket, you would probably get commentary on All India Radio, which is the national broadcasting radio station. So apart from that, there's nothing really there. So England are not alone in this. And while I understand that point of view, you cannot criticize a pitch or a stadium or, in fact, Indian cricket's legacy. Spin is Indian cricket's legacy. In that sense that, okay, our broadcasting schedule has been thrown haywire. I mean, the world feed is not just going to England. It's going to every part of the world. Even in India, Star Sports, who are the broadcaster, they're going to be affected. I mean, they had a lot of advertisement built up, the in-stadia advertisement. So, yes, it has hurt a lot of people's pockets. I mean, you were supposed to work this weekend, weren't you, Daniel?
But yeah, well, yes, it does me, and it does. And also, you know, in England, for this series, a commercial radio station, TalkSport, were covering it.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
All I'm saying is, I'm not saying that pitches need to be created in order to keep advertisers coming in to, you know, for 4 days. That is not what I'm saying at all. But what I am saying is that because of those circumstances, the specific circumstances in England, I think it has made the conversation around this, it has affected that conversation a little bit, and it certainly shouldn't do. As I said, you know, people need to take an objective view, come back a minute and say, wait a second, there's lots of other things in play here. You know, the India have come back from 1-0 down to be 2-1 up in the series. The series is still wide open. It can still be 2-2. It seems unlikely, of course, at the moment, but it's still alive. And the World Test Championship has still not been decided. And, you know, there'll be this really curious situation where Australian fans will be staying up through the night, you know, begging England to do well, which is just astounding. It's one of the great things about the World Test Championship, I think. And, of course, it brings India right back into the frame for that. So that might then, were they to get to that final, raise the profile of Test cricket. So when one says, you know, it's not good for Test cricket because, it's never as simple as that. There are lots of things that feed into what's good for Test cricket. I think what it might be is, I hope it'll be good for Test cricket in that I think sides have got to just accept that when they go abroad, they will face conditions that suit the home side. And if you want to be competitive, you've got to get down with that. You know, you've got to do your homework. You've got to get a different method, a different plan. You've got to learn from the way the home players play, both the way they bat and the way they bowl, because that will show you what's effective. I mean, I think I've said to you before, and no one has a problem with going to Australia and recognizing that you need fast bowlers who are big and strong and bowl it into the pitch with that soft kookaburra ball, because that's what their pitches do. Now, that means that, you know, it's harder for Jimmy Anderson, one of the greatest fast bowlers there has ever been, to be effective in Australia. But it's also a little bit harder for the likes of Josh Hazlewood and Pat Cummins to be as effective in English conditions, because the pitches aren't suited to their style of fast bowling. No one complains about this. This is a known fact. People have got a strange attitude towards spin. They think that if the ball turns dramatically, then there's something wrong with the wicket, rather than, well, this is a pitch that spins, and this is what it's going to do. So, you know, that's my view, Chetan. I've got so sick of telling everybody it for the last 2 weeks.
One of the things that has really bugged me from this aftermath is, if Joe Root is picking up 5 wickets, then the pitch is bad, then the pitch is really bad. I mean, that's not true. I mean, you take the example of Formula One, and are you telling me that, okay, a Williams, which is traditionally a racing team, but over the last 2 decades, they haven't really enjoyed winning races. If a Williams racing car goes on and wins the race, is it a bad race? No, it's a good race for Formula One. Or you remember Wimbledon, when Goran Ivanisevic won Wimbledon and he was a wild card. Are you telling me a wild card going on and winning Wimbledon, is it a bad thing for tennis? No, it's not. Similarly, Joe Root, a part-timer, picking up 5 wickets, is it a bad thing for spin bowling or a spin-friendly wicket? No, it's not. Let me tell you why. Because one of the major issues I have with that is, and again, it reaffirms the theory that the batsman didn't play well or play well enough, is because apart from Rishabh Pant, Joe Root did not get, or at least in the first innings, he did not even bowl to any of the top 5 Indian batsmen. So It would have been really interesting if he had bowled more to the top five Indian batsmen to see how they would have played him, but he didn't. All he got was the lower order batsman along with Rishabh Pant, who played away from his body on a pitch that was massively turning, which again brings in Kevin Peterson's point that not enough good batsmen in both the sides, and the batsmen who are not good enough aren't going to be able to score big runs on this pitch. So the lower order could not score big runs, and they got out to Joe Root. And again, another point in support of this theory. I mean, England won the toss in the first innings, and
they were 70 odd for two.
They were 70 odd for two. India were 90 odd for three, right? And from there, England collapsed to 112 all out, and India collapsed to 145 all out. This just goes to show that the batsmen got it really, really wrong. The other factor, and I will come to this because we're talking about Test cricket finding a new lease of life, or whether it's harmful for Test cricket, is because of the pink ball. That is one big factor. The pink ball with spin has been a major factor, I think. It's because of the extra lacquer. It's because of the seam on the SG pink ball. Remember, there have been quite a few pink ball test matches, but this is only the second pink ball test match with the SG ball. And in the first pink ball test match with the SG ball, we had pace-friendly conditions in Kolkata. The match was over in 3.5 days. Bangladesh were routed, and Indian pacers enjoyed, and Bangladesh pacers enjoyed. But this is the first time across world cricket that we are seeing a pink ball adapt to spin-friendly conditions. And for me, that is a very exciting prospect because it brings in the spinners. Yes, I thought the spinners really enjoyed gripping that ball. Even Joe Root got the pace right, got the bounce right. So the spinners enjoyed with the pink ball. It opens up a new avenue of day-night test cricket in India on spin-friendly conditions, because every time there's this discussion that the pink ball needs some grass on the pitch to have the shine, have the lacquer. But here it was not that case. They used the pink ball well, and spin made life difficult, which was, well, entertaining cricket, even if it was for 2 days.
It was. And look, it depends. What do people actually think they want from cricket? You know, it was exciting, wasn't it? It was exciting to watch. It was mesmerizing stuff. It was challenging. It was testing. I think this very exciting prospect, day-night tests in India being the norm, for a number of reasons. From a selfish point of view, they start at 9 o'clock in the morning rather than 4 in the morning, which I find considerably more clement. But also, you know, just the atmosphere of a packed ground. My one concern would be, I guess, if the game in India is going to go that way, either batters have got to get a lot better, or pitches have got to last a little bit longer before they take that degree of extravagant turn, because you will get, you know, 3 day test matches each time. And we do, I think, want test cricket to have, you know, more ups and downs. You know, I remember listening to the cricket social on the BBC, and someone said, watching this cricket at the moment is like watching a man wearing stilettos walking along an icy road. You just couldn't keep your eyes off it, and you thought there was going to be a tumble at any minute. Now, you know, the test cricket that we've grown up getting used to has more nuances within a day, where batters are on top and then bowlers are on top. And that wasn't the case in this game. But it didn't make it an invalid game of cricket. It made it a fascinating game of cricket. So, you know, I mean, like, not everything is going to be the same every time, Chetan. Why is everybody mad about this? Why do they think, you know, the first innings, they'll score 380. Second innings, they'll score 440. Third innings, they'll score 310. And the final innings, they'll win by one wicket or lose by one run. I mean, it's just nuts. That's not
going to happen. You're living in fool's paradise if you think that's going to happen. You're living in fool's paradise if you think that's going to happen repeatedly in Test cricket. But the one point that I do want to make here, and that's the World Test Championship, and would like to inform our listeners where it stands now. So because of that loss, England are now out of contention for the World Test Championship. They've gone down to number 4. India back at number 1. I mean, they were already at number 1 after winning the second test, but now firmly in number 1. They needed at least 2-1 or 3-1. What they need to do now is to avoid defeat in the fourth test match. Even with a draw, they can qualify for the final against New Zealand in England. I'm told it's going to happen in Southampton, AGS Bowl, not at Lord's, but we'll wait to hear we'll hate to hear a confirmation on that. But the final, to make it to the final, India need to avoid defeat. And Australia, and as you mentioned, Australian fans watching with glee and hope and anticipation that England bounce back and 2-2. Two factors here, Daniel. One, the World Test Championship, I love it. It gives more context to Test cricket. I like the percentage point system, especially if you don't insert it in the middle of the championship. I like it if it's from the beginning because it provides even greater context to Test match wins. Maybe they need to find a better system of points. Maybe that's up for debate. However, are we looking, if the World Test Championship persists in the next right cycle or going ahead, are we looking at a time where home advantage is going to be paramount? Everybody's going to make home-friendly conditions because they want points in the World Test Championship. And secondly, you know, how do you see the fourth test match developing? I mean, we need to talk about, you know, yes, the home conditions are relevant, but we need to talk about whether India will play on a similar kind of pitch in the fourth test match, considering that the World Test Championship is still at stake for them.
Well, firstly, what I would say is that home conditions have been in favour of home sides from the very beginning of Test cricket. You look at the, yes. Since the 19th and early 20th century, big runs were scored in Australia, far fewer runs were scored in England. Timeless tests in Australia, three-day tests in England, because the conditions were different. England have gone to India, famously in 1980-81, 81-82. They lost the first test on a spicy and difficult wicket, and the next five games were really boring draws on flat wickets because India wanted to protect that lead. And this is not unusual. Every team does it. England prepare those wickets. I think that won't change. I think it'll be down to teams to adapt. There's no doubt about that. As for this final game, well, there's two very specific ways India can go. One is stay exactly the same way, assuming, I think that this would be the correct way, that their spin bowlers are better adapted to those conditions. They bowl at a better pace and England's batters are struggling and they don't really have any options for changing it, to be brutally honest with you. Yeah, they've got pretty much their best lineup out there. Or to say, right, let's make a draw pitch where you just can't take 20 wickets. Now, I don't even know how feasible that is. We assume that ground staff can do incredible things, but can you actually just make a pitch so dead that you can guarantee it won't break up over 5 days? If you lose the toss in that situation, who knows what could happen on the fourth and fifth days? So I would expect India to stick with a template that's working for them now. They've got over that hurdle of the first game, which played into England's hands when they won the toss and scored big runs, the pitch deteriorated. I'd expect them to go with the same kind of template. And I'd expect more of the same. From an England point of view, though, I would say that even despite having been beaten in under 2 days, I think it's a less painful loss than losing over 5 days when you're being hammered to all parts and, you know, Curran there scoring a triple hundred. Because actually, you can still believe that with Root and Leach on a pitch like that, they're going to cause India's batters some problems. And if Root and Stokes and Crawley get an innings, that can be the difference between the two sides. So perversely, I think India should keep doing what they're doing, keep preparing these pitches that work for them. And I think for England, if they maintain a positive mindset, they'll say, well, a couple of good sessions and one good innings with the bat in a game like that can turn it round for us.
Well, that's an interesting point, and I think it's a double-edged sword if India continue to make such wickets. But I think the fact that the fourth test match will be played with the red ball, I think it'll be more like the second test in Chennai than the third test in Ahmedabad, where, yes, there was spin, but the red ball was perhaps not doing as much as the pink ball, so the Indian batsman will be able to counter it. The other factor for me is I don't see James Anderson playing the fourth test match. I don't perhaps even see Stuart Broad playing it. I think if they need to play three pacers, which I doubt, but if they do, then they'll probably bring in Ollie Stone and Chris Wokes, or maybe one of them along with Jofra Archer and Ben Stokes. But I do think they will bring about Dom Bess as the fourth bowler or the second spinner into their 11. So maybe England might have to weaken their bowling. And the thing is, for me, the only danger for me, if you make a pitch, a road-like pitch, like it was in the first test, the only danger for me there is England batting first, putting 600 or 500 on the board, and then India not batting well, and then coming under pressure in the second innings, and then James Anderson reversing the ball. If James Anderson isn't playing, then that element goes away a bit. However, you still want to take that risk where the game is so dependent on toss. The one thing these spin-friendly wickets have done is they've made the toss, you know, immaterial in the last three test matches. Yeah. And that has been one of the positives to come out. So it'll be intriguing. It will be an 8-day break while we contemplate every possible permutation and hope or wonder what sort of pitch will be made and what sort of team combinations are likely to be and what will be the final shape of the World Test Championship. But we do hope that you join us on Wednesday for the preview of the 4-test match. It's going to be a cracker. Until then, it's me, Chetan Narula, and Daniel Macross saying goodbye.
Goodbye. We'll